Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
808 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steel Talking, and I'm your host, Geralyn Steele. It is what I love to do, is sit here and gab with you. And we've got quite a story this half hour. You know, I keep asking myself, Geralyn, what does it really mean to you to, you know, really be pro-country? I'm the girl with the flag in the car, you know. I'm that girl. I love patriotic songs. I've recorded one before, you know. But what does Independence Day and even freedom mean to me? Well, my guest tonight, I want to hear it from him. 16 years in the military, right out of Vassar. It's not your typical military story at all. Well, Benjamin Bush is joining us. He grew up in central New York and graduated as a studio art major who joined the United States Marine Corps. He's an author, a poet, an actor. He is best known for his portrayal of Anthony, and I think it's Colicchio. Do you know this from The Wire? Come on. Come on, Kevin. What is it? I forget it, from HBO series, the original series, The Wire, which was so, so popular. Well, welcome to Steel Talking, Benjamin. Thank you so much for your service, and it's just great to have you join us here tonight.
It's a pleasure to pretend I'm in Minneapolis right now.
I love that you're trying to. You know, a lot has changed in our country since your tours in Iraq, right?
Yeah.
A whole lot has changed. It was a different world back then. How are you feeling about your country now?
You know, when I initially went to Iraq in 2003 with a light armor reconnaissance unit, the fighting was brief, at least on an organized level. And then we were immediately charged with creating a democracy, fostering democratic ideals in a place that had never really dealt with that, at least hadn't in recent history. And I found myself examining America. What is it that we have that is so superb? How do I define freedom to people who have lived under autocracy? And then how do I discuss a system of government which represents it? And I looked at our Constitution, which is an excellent document, and I examined this new world for me in a way that I really finally, for the first time, tried to understand and articulate what freedom meant, what democracy meant, what its gifts were. And I didn't quite examine its dangers. You know, when everyone can vote, it suddenly means something to people who are a minority. And what happened in Iraq was the Sunnis who suddenly realized what democracy meant. Is that they would never have more than 20% of the vote in a country that they once controlled, which means they would never get anything they wanted. Because my example was America. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, we have 49% of either party in Congress, they now, without the ability now to apparently discuss and compromise, they say they can't get anything done. 49%. Mm-hmm. And they've lost all power. And I thought, well, what is it like to be 20%? And then, of course, you come back and go, okay, what is it like to be black or Hispanic? What is it like to be a minority anywhere? How does democracy and freedom redefine itself from all those different perspectives? And it worried me that I couldn't clearly understand and discuss what that really meant from my own perspective. Coming back to my own country, I realized that it's an experiment, of course. Democracy is an experiment. Mm-hmm. It's always changing. It's evolving. But I wasn't seeing it doing well. I went back to Iraq in 2005 and fought in Ramadi, which was, you know, a disaster at the time. The worst place in the world to be in 2005. And once again, I had now been to war and been home. And I realized by 2005 that America had kind of had war fatigue. It was no longer in the news. Ramadi wasn't being reported on except casualties. Mm-hmm. It wasn't being examined. The population was tired of the war. It was no longer considered interesting for news feeds. I'm sure UN Radio probably felt that.
Absolutely.
We're tired of talking about the war. And I feel now that we're even more polarized, that a country now that freedom is simply equated with selfishness so much that freedom has been redefined, rebranded, I guess, not as a collective word for our nation, as an idea, but as a word just meant for each of us as individuals. And that is what freedom means, that each of us has the right to live as we like. But it's been subverted in a way that lets us hurt others, take freedoms from others, allow hatred as a right under freedom's definition, free speech. And it feels like a time of the anti-intellectual, like the zealot and the fool. None of these people are interested in conversation. Most have inherited their opinions, and they fear changing them. And these aren't people who understand consequence until their selfishness is attacked by a direct loss of some kind. Something they take for granted has to be taken from them. And the cause has to be explained in like one sentence. You know, you're losing this because you voted for this bill, this politician, or this idea, and this is the cost to you. And it's a dour way to see what I once thought so simply was freedom. But that's the way I feel. How about you?
Well, you hit on a lot of those same things that I'm feeling. But here's my challenge. The Constitution never mentions capitalism. And because of the growth of capitalism in our country, and I've been a capitalist most of my life until I really started to watch it all unfold in the last two decades. And it's a whole nother beast that has caused the greed and has caused us to lose our compassion and has, you know, caused us to stop voting for what's best for the majority of us, not just our own household. And that has culminated into something quite disastrous for us. And as I watch it all unfold, and I love this country, and I say to myself, what are you going to do about it, Geraldine? You know, I talked about it on my show. Make sure you get out and vote. You know, make sure that those that we put in office understand that budget is a moral code. It really is. It's a moral document. And so whatever you're voting on, if you're putting people in, make sure that they are voting to protect and serve all of us. And that has been a real challenge to watch that unfold. Knowing that, for me, I have, you know, with all of how I feel about this country, and I get very emotional about it, I haven't regretted, you know, saying that I love this country. I haven't regretted having that flag, you know, in my car at times. But I wonder, have you regretted serving those that have served us, fought for us, died for us? You know, have you regretted the serving that you've done and continue to do?
I think I was the best American I've ever been in uniform, because it was the one place where we had singular purpose. There was nothing I could do to gain advantage. You know, all of our tasks were shared. All of our races were blended. We were all, you know, the old line, you're all green now. And I just didn't feel that there were those influences that everyone, of course, came from. We all came from neighborhoods in Baltimore or, you know, fields in Oklahoma. But we ended up in a unit, and it was our unit. And I, you know, I talked about this recently at AOL's Build event. It was just, I kind of felt that everyone should join us. Like we were the America mm-hmm. that I idealized, where, you know, there wasn't a way to do better for myself. I never put myself first. You know, I always wanted my Marines to have the best conditions imaginable, and of course, we were always thrown in the worst ones.
Right.
But we shared it, and you know, going out into the world thereafter was a large adjustment. You know, no one was holding doors. There were no more courtesies. There was no more sense of urgency to help anyone. Whereas at any moment in my units, you know, if it appeared that someone needed help, everyone ran to them. And to so much so that I would have died for them. These people who, before they came into my platoon or my company, I never knew, would never have known. They were worth giving my life for. And it, you know, we hear veterans talk about this all the time, where, you know, their unit becomes the most powerful tribe in their life, mm-hmm. sometimes stronger even than family.
Family, absolutely.
And which is cruel to families. You think about the allegiance, you know, we're willing to leave our families to, quote, defend them. But it's kind of a, you know, we're leaving because the Marines are going. And, you know, I severed myself from home when I went to war. I left my wedding ring at home.
Wow.
I didn't want the war to get anyone but me, which, when you think about it from my wife's perspective, is a very hard thing for her to grapple with, that I was willing to leave her, leave our entire future together, leave my young daughter. And I left her at a month old and came back on her first birthday. That I'd be willing to do that. And for what was it exactly? Was it because I was so, you know, passionate about freeing the Iraqis? You know, no. I don't think anyone was passionate about freeing the Iraqis. You know, if we could do some good, great. But it was because my unit was going. And wherever my unit was going, I would be passionately involved in, you know, attacking Antarctica to free it of ice. You know, whatever the mission was, I went because that's where they were going. That's where my tribe was going. And I loved them. And I just thought that was the place where America was in its best form.
But do you look at that tribe as, you know, as the United States? Do you look at that tribe?
Yeah, well, it becomes America for you. There is no more America when you're in combat. When you're in a small sector of Ramadi or any, you know, valley in Afghanistan, America is who, you know, the Americans you're with. And that's almost as large an idea of America as you can grapple with, because home is far away. And when you get back home, I mean, this is a complaint which has kind of become redundant because you hear it so much, but we find that they don't care about these wars they're sending us to. Not enough to stop them. Not enough to figure them out. They care so little, they'll let us go die there. And then when we come back, we feel differently about those people we left home to protect. You know, we look at that selfishness and we think, why are we defending this? What exactly is this that we defend? And then, of course, you see the wonderful things. You see children at school. You see what America has and the richness of its ideas. You know, the incredible potential of people, the incredible generosity of some people. You think, oh, well, yeah, we want to continue that. And we also think, because we've been in some terrible places, you know, I can walk around almost anywhere, and it's unlikely I'll be attacked. It's unlikely I'll be blown up. It's unlikely my children will be under threat. That's because we collectively have decided on a certain number of rules, which most of us honor. Most of us aren't murderers and criminals. And it's because collectively that's what America has told itself it is.
Final
we aren't
question.
Those people.
Final question for you, sir.
Yeah.
Do you believe the United States is still worth fighting for, worth dying for? Would you do it again, over and over?
See, once again, I go back to the fact that, you know, would I join the Marines again? Would I serve as a Marine? Would I be with Marines? And I have to say yes. But if you're asking if I'm sure what I'm defending is a good thing, is a pure thing, I have to say that's been corrupted. And no.
I really appreciate you joining us tonight. And as we try to celebrate, our Independence Day on Tuesday, I will be thinking about you because you've given so much more than so many. And you went out there on your own. This was a volunteer thing. You did it. And I do believe that each one of us in some way should be able to be a part of the military in some way, give in some way of our time and our service to the military. And maybe then it can change some of that selfishness. But I do appreciate
I'm in favor of, sorry to interrupt, but I'm in favor of national service, not military service. It's me part of that. But if everyone gave 2 years of their lives right after high school, while we're still energetic and to an extent, we can still have our ideas challenged and incorporated as young people in the country, whether it's planting trees, clearing things, helping in hospitals, teaching in schools, teaching in, you know, AmeriCorps across the world, or serving in the military. I think we've lost that collective identity as a nation. And that's what I wish we had. That's what I had in the military. And I don't have it anywhere else in America that way. We have it on one day, like the 4th of July. And that's, you know, that's a celebration of a revolution where we freed ourselves from an empire and became one. But, you know, when we sing the Star Spangled Banner, you know, it's that's from the War of 1812 where we tried to steal a piece of Canada. And we had to fight the British. It's there's nothing, if you look at the history of many of these things we celebrate, they're just not as clean as you'd like to think.
It's not as clean, but please be encouraged. In the state of Minnesota, our young people are very involved. They volunteer a lot. We have some of the highest numbers of residents that volunteer and give of our time and of our finances, of anything that we have to help. And I'm so, so proud of Minnesota for doing that. So just know it's not wasted. It's not all of us. And look at those that ran out of that hospital when that shooting just happened a couple days ago. There were nurses and doctors that ran out that did anything they needed to do to help those that needed the help. To make sure they were saving lives.
We still have wonderful volunteers in this country.
We really do.
I don't demean them at all. And I love the fact that Minneapolis is a reading town. And ideas are, you know, language is the most important thing that we have to communicate with one another. That we have to take ideas, to change them, to think and consider and articulate our points of view. And as reading is becoming, you know, far less embraced by the population, I'm always happy when I'm in Minneapolis because I know everyone reads.
we do read. And please know the written word is important, too. Who's writing it?
It is.
From what perspective and what bias? That, to me, is the most powerful thing. So just stay encouraged and just know that we appreciate you here in the great state of Minnesota. And I do wish you a happy Independence Day.
And I wish you and every American a great happy Independence Day. Enjoy the day and think about it. I hope we think about it instead of just, you know, celebrate it.
Benjamin
Thank you
Bush.
For the time.
Thank you. You take care. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. It is now 8:28 here at WCCO. Welcome back. I want to let you know a little bit more about Benjamin Bush, if you want to look him up. I said he's an actor, absolutely. But did you know he was in 27 films and television shows as well? He has screamed. He's been a director, a writer, director, and producer of films. He screened about 113, you know, different times at international film festivals with his films. He has three traveling exhibitions of photography, one called The Art in War, Occupation and Abstract Matter. Seriously, his latest collection of images, Bringing Bones to the War. Really, war is his life. This is what he talks about, writes about. He is the author of a memoir called Dust to Dust. And it's been hailed and critically acclaimed, even with the New York Times. He teaches nonfiction in the low residency MFA program in creative writing at Sierra Nevada College. And he has been an active participant in numerous veteran art and writing programs, including Words After War, Voices from Working Service, and Theater of War. He gives and gives and gives of himself. His personal decorations include the Bronze Star, with V device and a Purple Heart, along with Meritorious Service, Campaign and Service Medals as well. He's really quite a remarkable man. And as we heard his words, I don't know about you, but it truly moved me. I will be listening to that interview over and over again, and I will glean something different each time. We're going to take a break, do some weather, and come back in just a moment.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is now 8:34 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talking, and I'm your host, Geralyn Steele. I tell you, it's what I love to do is sit here and gab with you. I've been doing it 18 years, and I still absolutely love it. Well, this half hour, we just finished talking about Independence Day and what does that mean to a vet, a Marine who fought in Iraq, and he really spoke so candidly and so truthfully from his heart. With this half hour, we are talking about patriotism. How important is it? What does it mean to be a patriot? Has it been redefined? How many of us are? Do you think of yourself as one? Well, the guest tonight is Larry Swikart. He is an American historian and professor of history at the University of Dayton. He is the author of more than a dozen scholarly and popular fiction books. His best-known popular book is A Patriot's History of the United States in 2004. That was written in 2004. He co-authored that with Michael Allen as well. We'll get a perspective of patriotism in the United States from him right now. Welcome to WCCO, Larry. May I call you Larry?
Sure, absolutely.
Welcome to CCO. Patriotism in various dictionaries is defined as, and I know you know it well, but devoted love and support of one's country. And that is truly saying a lot. Is that how you define it as well?
Yes. I kind of also look at it in terms of if a person says, I use the example of marriage, a guy says, I love my wife, but he doesn't want to wear a wedding ring or any symbol of that love of his wife. Do you really love your wife? He says, I love my wife, but every time somebody says something negative about his wife, he chimes in and says, yeah, that's right. So he beats up on his wife. He says, well, she had it coming. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it's easier to see who isn't a patriot than who is.
Wow. Great analogy. I'm so glad you said that. It brings clarity, that's for sure. Knowing that, you see around you so many people that claim they are patriotic. You know, they wear the flag on their bodies and clothing, and which, by the way, is really illegal, right? We're not supposed to clothe ourselves, wrap ourselves in the flag, that's for sure. But you see that and you hear people say it. How does that make you feel? Because you really do see yourself as a patriot.
Well, I don't know. You know, I've never worn an American flag lapel, and as a Christian, I've never worn a cross. But nevertheless, it doesn't offend me. Certainly, I you know, great. If that's the way you feel, absolutely tremendous. Do it.
Mm-hmm. When I look back over the years, my life here on this earth, and I try to remember what did patriotism look like to me when I was 8, 9, or 10 years old, and what does it look like to me today? Of course, 9/11 comes through clearly, because when that happened, patriotism was on display throughout the country. But it wasn't long enough. You know, there was the Congress standing on the steps singing together. There were people that put out their flags everywhere, everywhere you look, neighborhood to neighborhood, even in urban areas. You know, it was amazing how many people really showed what they felt about this country. But it's fleeting, kind of like happiness. It kind of comes and goes. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, any emotion, whether it's patriotism, love, hate, whatever it is, it's hard to sustain. Over time, it ebbs and flows. The most recent book I have is a Politically Incorrect Guide to the American Revolution. And one of the things, of course, we deal with are the people who call themselves the Patriots. And it was no small group. Tens of thousands of people affixed their names to groups called the Association some 2 years before the Declaration of Independence. But many of these guys, men especially, who would fight would sign an enlistment for a couple of years, or even a year, and when their enlistment was up, they had to go home and tend the crops. And so you would see these patriots who were willing to put their life on the line, but, you know, come January 1st, by God, my time's up, and I got to go take care of my family, and I'll be back again in 6 months.
Right. Right. That's a whole different way of looking at it, right? But that was a necessity. They had to go home and take care of their families. Today, it's a little different, though, right?
Right. And you know, 9/11 was different because even though we were attacked, there was no need for or reason for us to invoke a draft, to have, you know, any kind of rationing. Any of the things that accompanied World War II were not necessary to defeat the enemy at hand. And so, you know, President Bush got a lot of flack for saying, you know, go about your lives. And I see why people would criticize him for that. But what he was essentially saying is show that we cannot be bullied by an act of terror. Show that you are stronger than an act of terror.
Mm. Okay. When it comes to being a patriot, to me, it begins in the household. It begins with the parents or the guardians, those that are raising the children, to teach them about the history of this country. And I know for you, that's been a real challenge because depending on what books are being used, I know you have you feel some kind of way about that, correct?
Oh, yeah. One of my books is called 48 Liberal Lies About American History. So you know where I come from.
I know exactly where you come from, exactly. And you and I are at opposite ends of that. But I do share in the same passion about the written word, because to me, it really is power.
So, well, this is one of the things that differentiates America in broader sense, Western society, than many, many non-Western societies, is a written record, a written historical record, as opposed to an oral tradition. And one of in Native Americans, for example, one of the real weaknesses of the oral tradition is you can never really prove what somebody said.
Right.
But in a written document, you can always go back and say, no, no, this is in the document. And that's what I loved about Martin Luther King Jr. was that he said, we're not asking for something new. We're asking you to fulfill this contract.
That's
because
right.
It says right here in this contract, this Declaration of Independence, this Constitution of the United States, we are entitled to these rights as Americans.
Mm-hmm. As people, period. Absolutely. Okay, so saying that, if it's not taught in the home where, you know, of course, the children will grow up and maybe it will come and go, you know, it will be in the recesses of our hearts and minds if it's taught to us. You know, I remember in high school and even elementary school, you know, having to pray before class started, having to say, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance and that sort of
Correct.
Thing. And we don't do any of that anymore. So if we're not teaching patriotism, is it possible to be patriotic if you are not taught?
I think you lose it, and I think you lose it steadily, and it's you know, down a slippery slope. Almost every religion has certain forms of practices. For example, Catholicism and the Stations of the Cross or whatever. Almost all Christian traditions have baptism. There are certain things that you do because the purpose of those things is to bring up in remembrance, as the Bible says, bring up in remembrance of these things. You know, the parades, the 4th of July fireworks are done in remembrance of what the patriots gave so we could have this country, but those guys who signed up in those associations put their lives on the line that we could have.
But as you know the written word about this country and what you believe in, but as we find out that some of that written word was untrue, you are not necessarily one to back away from that belief. You say, no, there are certain things we keep, and we just, but like you believe, you write about Christopher Columbus and so much more. Do you believe that once we learn the truth and it changes things, that we should change the history and start teaching it correctly?
Oh, of course. You don't want to teach myth. As Mike Allen and I said in A Patriot's History of the United States, we don't believe in my country, right or wrong. What we objected to were the histories that were being written. My country always wrong. And the presumption of guilt, the presumption of America being evil is just not tenable. And so, of course, you always want to address the historical record. For example, in 2014, we put out a 10th anniversary edition of A Patriot's History of the United States. And we edited a lot of things because new research had come out that caused us to rethink some of the pieces of data in there. But in the long run, what we found that even after the new research came out, it really strengthened our case more than ever.
But that has a whole lot to do with, you know, quantifying it and qualifying it. I mean, you have to, you know, when you start collecting all of the research,
mm-hmm.
our biases get involved. You know, I'm in
Absolutely.
Grad school right now, and I know how that works. And now they're starting
Absolutely.
To allow that in graduate school, where they say to you, yes, you have to include your biases because we've learned over the decades that you can't help but do that. And so with your,
well,
with where you stand as a patriot mm-hmm. and as a conservative, right? And you look at the history, do you say to yourself, I'm only going to write from that conservative perspective, or do you let go of that
no.
in some way?
Oh, no. You know, and this is a big debate in the late 1800s between the German school called the historicist school that said you've got to extract all your values. You have to get down to just the facts, as the old Dragnet TV show used to say, just the facts, ma'am. And a newer school came in the during the Cold War, started by the left, said, well, you can't ever get rid of your bias. You must embrace your bias and counteract what you think is wrong. But as you just mentioned, the mere selection of one fact over another, one document over another, automatically is going to bias your research one way or another. So the way Mike Allen and I treated it in Patriot's History is we didn't say this book is without bias. We said we attempted to find the truth as best we could, and we admitted to the biases that we had. But again, we tried to, I would say 60% of our endnotes were what you would call liberal sources or liberal historians. So we didn't go out to find historians who supported our case. We kind of went the other direction.
Okay. On your website, you mention the values of Western civilization.
Correct.
What do you believe them to be?
Let me hone that down by what I would call the pillars of American exceptionalism. We hear a lot about American exceptionalism. Of course, President Obama said, well, there's no such thing. You know, every country believes they're exceptional. But America has four pillars combined that are absolutely unique to any nation on earth. First is it was founded as a Christian and mostly Protestant, that's very important, mostly Protestant religious tradition. And the reason that's so critical is that the Protestants that came to America were overwhelmingly congregational.
Yep.
They believed in bottom-up governance,
yep,
not like the Anglican Church, which was top-down, meaning England didn't have this, Australia didn't have this, Canada didn't have this. So in the very first pillar, America is separated from much of the rest of the world. Second pillar was common law, which came over from the Germans through England. And common law says that God puts the law in the hearts of the people, and people elect or select leaders who will merely carry out that law. It's in direct contravention to divine right of kings in Europe that later became the basis of all European, coming from France and Napoleon, civil law, which then was spread by virtue of colonization to much.
Is that number
Africa,
three, civil law?
Nation. That's number two, is civil law. So you have Protestant religious tradition, mm-hmm, civil law, private property with written titles and deeds. This is something you do not find in much of Latin America or Africa. Mm-hmm. And the written titles and deeds, we were just talking about the written word and why that's so important. This is critical because once you have written titles and deeds, you can leverage your property for loans and growth.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't prove you own a house or a car, you cannot get a loan on that house or a car.
Right. And property is everything. In fact, many, many families today believe that property, you're wealthy if you have property. You know,
that's right.
It used to be you couldn't even vote unless you had property. Okay, let's continue. Number four.
Number four is fairly recent. And that's a free market economy. It doesn't come along really until about 1780. But if you combine these four, only America, out of all the nations in the world, has these four characteristics. Many nations have three and four, mm-hmm, but don't have common law or a Christian Protestant tradition.
So in those are the values of Western civilization. Okay, let me finish up because we have to go. I just want to make sure that I understand, because when I hear the word patriot, the first thing I think about is a neoconservative, okay? I'm thinking Republicans, you know, that word has just been kind of taken and or given to the Republicans. Well, CNN just wrote an article today, it was released, that said, you know, it looks like the Democrats are reclaiming that. But really, it's all of ours. If we are patriots, it's all of ours. Do you believe it's possible for all Americans to be patriotic, to believe in patriotism?
Well, I believe it's possible for all patriotic Americans to be patriotic. Go back to my original thing. When your wife is getting beat up, are you siding with the other guy and say she had it coming? Are you never wanting to be associated with any patriotic display, such, mm-hmm, as the flag or, you know, a parade or whatnot. There was a study several years ago.
But wait, before you go into that, because we're losing time, I just want to make sure. So if they are claiming to be patriots, but they are not, in your own view, what does that mean to you? Do you feel like they shouldn't be here?
No, I just feel like they don't have a right to the term.
Okay. I wish we had more time with you. I do apologize, sir, because there's so many other questions I have for you. And you have a whole lot in your brain. And I would love to touch on that because I don't have to pay for it. I get to have you on the show.
So I just stumbled out.
Well, I really appreciate it, Larry. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. If people want more information about you, where do they go?
PatriotsHistoryUSA.com. All one word, PatriotsHistoryUSA.com.
PatriotsHistory.USA.com.
With an F, PatriotsHistoryUSA.com.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Sure appreciate it. All right, we're going to take a break, breathe, and the time check right now. It is 8:49, the McCarthy Auto World time, 8:49. Let's make it 8:50, and it's certified Cadillacs on sale up to 40% off the original MSRP. How about that? Check out McCarthyAuto.com. It is now 8:53 here at WCCO. Welcome back. By the way, that's Taylor Swift. You know, she recently released her whole catalog, really. You know, she just kind of said, everybody can listen free. You know, that's going to sell just a huge number of tour tickets. So believe me, she will benefit from it. But that's amazing. Now, we've just heard in this hour, in the 8 o'clock hour, we heard what it means, what Independence Day and what freedom means to a vet. Really, he's still involved in the Marine Guard. So he still is giving. But boy, what an incredible to listen to him. It was really an incredible half hour. And then you also learned from a professor, an author who really believes, that patriotism is something we all should be, but we all are not. Even those of us who can say that we think that we are doesn't necessarily mean that. He is absolutely right wing, far right wing, and he believes what he believes. And my question, though, between these two guests, how in the world do we bring those two people together? It's kind of like a microcosm of who we are today. We're so polarized. You know, even though the Marine was the one who was saying, look, I fought for my tribe, and I don't know necessarily if I would, want to go back out and fight again for this country. But he loves this country. It's just there are two opposite ends to me. One seems to have absolute clarity, and the other one, I don't know. But it is a lesson in being completely polarized. We're at opposite ends of the spectrum. That's uncomfortable for me. Is it uncomfortable for you? Because it sure is uncomfortable for me. It's not a good place to be. And how long will we sit here? Because we really have set down. We have sat down on the ends of that spectrum. We've crossed our legs and crossed our arms, and we are defiant, and we've decided I'm staying there. Nothing will ever get done when you're polarized. Nothing. Whether it's in your household, within your family unit, your nucleus, whether it's in your community, your city, your state, your country, doesn't matter. Whether you're in a classroom, when you're at odds, absolute opposites, there's no way we can get anything done. Look at what's happening in the state of Minnesota, where the legislators are suing the governor. How did we get here? You go over and over and over again. You look at, special sessions, nearly every time for like a decade. When do we stop and get our jobs done? We couldn't do that. Could we do that here? No, we can't do that at CCO and not do our job. That's why you have job descriptions and qualifications. You're supposed to get it done. And it's the same thing in DC. Same thing. How are we going to get anything done if we're not going to bring everybody to the table? Isn't that the point? I'm laughing because I'm just trying not to cry. And I've done my share of crying in the last month. Sometimes tears of anger, absolute anger. Sometimes tears of sadness. But I keep asking myself, how do we move? What will get us off our buns? Killings of children? Nope, didn't do it. Shootings at universities and in churches? Nope, nope, didn't do it. More guns were sold, more people have them. What? What is it going to take? Is it going to take a natural disaster like the sun all of a sudden doing a sunburst that burns the whole earth like a mile down? Is that what it's going to take? What? Because as of this moment, today, while we're looking, you know, we're right there looking at Independence Day on Tuesday. I can see it. I can smell it. It's coming. Yet you may not feel so patriotic. You may not feel like you are part or engaged in this country. You may not feel like your voice is being heard or that you can do anything about it, but we can. We've come a lot further than this. What is bothering us today can be very destructive. But remember the Civil War, remember slavery, remember so much more. Remember the Revolution, read your history. We have overcome so much more. We can overcome this. If the lawmakers will get together and actually do their jobs. How about that? What a novel idea. Not just on a national level, but on a local level as well. We matter. We hired them. We can fire them. We hired them. We can fire them. But it's going to take us together. It's like, think of it as brain matter. If half my brain is not working, well, hey, half my brain is not active. Hey. I don't know about you, but this was opening for me. My eyes are wide open. Please open yours. We'll be back in just a minute.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.